This is the Canadian Agent Missional Podcast. This is one of our special episodes in which we get a chance to dive into the culture of a church. Today, we're talking about Korean culture, and we got our special guest, James Yang, here with us today. Stick around. Korean community has been part of Canada for a little while, for a number of generations, and parents or grandparents have immigrated over here and have had their kids onwards into a third and fourth generations and such. Do you find that they have carried on any of those traditions through those generations? And especially, you know, from a spiritual standpoint, like, you know, Koreans have been influenced by Buddhism and Confucianism and Christianity, right? It's one of the fewer countries, I think, in the Asian countries that have such a Christian presence in it. You know, how do you find that affects the way in which you relate to other Koreans? And how are you sensitive to kind of that background as well?
I think definitely Buddhism and Confucianism are two very interesting spiritualities. I think that does find its way somehow into the Korean church context. And I'm sure similarly for a lot of Asian church context, but especially with the Korean church, where it's very much emphasized in some of the practices that you do see in the Korean church, which I think in heart, in origin, means well. You can identify that biblically in some extent, but I think even things like morning prayer, Koreans are all about the morning prayer. You know, they'll get up at 4:30 in the morning and get up and get ready and get out the door so that they can go to morning prayer 5:30 in the morning at the church and drive over and pray, and then afterwards go and open up their convenience stores and their restaurants, and so I believe it comes from a context where people desired, I think, that community and trying to provide a time for their congregation to engage spiritually, to have time with God, where else otherwise most immigrant folks who immigrated here in the 60s and 70s, they're extremely, extremely busy.
They're building a life.
Yeah, they're building from scratch. They came here, they had nothing. I remember my father telling me that when he was younger, he came on literally a nickel. He had a nickel in his pocket that was sent to him through the mail by my grandparents who had immigrated here first so that he could make a phone call as soon as he landed in Canada.
Wow.
So he would come here with a nickel in his pocket.
For
the phone call. And he would hold on to that for dear life. And so they literally started from nothing.
Sure.
And they're building their life from scratch. And so I think the fear of a lot of the pastors of the church at the time who are trying to lead these congregations is that a lot of times Korean people can easily be dragged into being workaholics. And so they would just work out of the just being desperate to provide for their families, for their children, for you know, even their own mothers and fathers or their siblings and their spouses. And so they would work long hours, either work at a factory or they would open up a restaurant or they would open up a convenience store or a variety store or dry cleaners or something where it needed to open at early hours of the morning and work till very, very late at night. And so they would get very, very little of spiritual nurturing.
Right.
Telling an age of people to open up your Bible, to pray, and to have spiritual disciplines in their life was very, very difficult because they lived very, very busy lives. And so reaching them with the gospel was very difficult. And so Korean pastors in many ways wanted to reach them and wanted them to become more spiritually grounded and to grow in their faith, and dragging them out to a Bible study midweek was very, very difficult.
Sure.
So they would provide a number of different ways where they can just show up and worship or pray and listen to a message and then go about their day. They're up early anyways, so get up a little bit earlier and then just come out and pray. And so they would gather every morning as part of that sort of the program that pastors would provide each morning, and they would gather in the morning to pray. At the I think at the beginning there were many testimonies of faith,
right?
How God would provide for many of their needs, and there's a lot of people who grew spiritually out of those experiences, and I think amongst a lot of the people that have grown up, you know, that immigrated here, maybe in their mid-teens and early 20s, who had come to know the Lord through those kind of ministries here in Canada. But I think what it's become is now is a tradition. It's something that we must do and need to do, even though the context doesn't really fit anymore.
Right.
Yes, there are still people who still need to get up that early in the morning, but I think it's a very, very different culture now.
Mm.
But that tradition has sort of carried on. And some people criticize it, saying is that's a very Buddhist practice. Buddhists would get up early in the morning, they would do their chanting and their praying.
Right.
But Christians will say, no, that's from the example of Jesus, where he would rise early in the morning.
Right.
Oh, that's also the offices of the church.
That's where, right.
Yeah. Hey, regardless of which way it came, maybe it has been redeemed from Buddhism, or maybe it is strictly practicing what Jesus did, but still, you know,
yeah,
like that discipline and that conviction to pray, you know, I never knew that it kind of stemmed from a place of the situation in which people lived in.
Because that's pretty interesting, because, you know, in the Chinese context, like, there's a lot of Chinese folks who immigrated and also did restaurant business and stuff, yeah, like that. But
they don't wake up early.
I don't think there's any, like, such practices in the Chinese church where they would. Maybe Chinese people just don't want to wake up early. I don't know. I don't.
No, they didn't come home from work. They're just still at work.
I mean, that could be the case.
Yeah, yeah. They picked up a second job. Yeah, but you know, we talked about this a little bit before, about how one avenue to reach Canadian Asians is to create ministries or to look for opportunities to meet them where they're at. Like, for example, you know, restaurant worker ministries, right, has been something that's been happening over the last number of years, and that's one way to engage. But yeah, like, I didn't know that, you know, having the need or the drive to working that hard has led to something like morning prayer.
I mean, Korean churches were essentially built on morning prayer. It's a tradition for Korean churches to have midweek worship on Wednesdays. And so Wednesday night, there would be a worship time. And all of these kind of ministries came from hardworking contexts and situations of immigrancy. And also, even in the Korean context, where even after the Korean War, the country was very much on in a position where they needed to build their country back up.
Mm.
And so even though a lot of Koreans had left the hometown context, they still carried those traditions because the struggle was very similar.
Mm.
You know, in the 70s, 60s, 70s, 80s, Koreans were still picking up to build their country back up.
Right.
After the Korean, and just the Korean War just, you know, demolished South Korea as a whole. So everybody was working extremely hard. And the temptation for a lot of Koreans during that context, I believe, was to be workaholics. You would literally work till you die.
Right.
Amongst Christian pastors, their concern was, will all these people whom we love, these are people that we cherish and love as our parishioners, as our congregations, and as our nation as a whole, will we continue to see this generation be born into a working culture and then die as a working culture, or to know Christ in the midst of that? And so there was this deep sense of yearning and needing to call people, especially in that kind of context where people were so, their life was based on their success. Their significance in life was based on their success.
Sure.
And the pastors were saying, no, we want to see you know Jesus, and that is the basis of your life.
Sure. Let me actually ask a follow-up off that. Is that, do you feel that mentality has shaped a way in which a person follows Jesus? Do they feel that it's still very performance-oriented in their own faith, meaning like, oh, you know, as a Christian, like I need to earn the love of God. I need to be living and performing to this standard and to this level, or else I'm not a good Christian. And then guilt comes in and shame comes in. And even, you know, on the side of ministry, like, do you feel that that workaholic or that work mentality has even affected the way pastors live their life, that they are just pushing themselves to extremes?
Absolutely. I think it definitely has become part of the Korean church culture as well. What was meant to bring their congregation from a very work-centric culture back to, you know, really knowing God and knowing Jesus and knowing the gospel, to almost a prosperity gospel kind of focus, where we now see, you know, if you don't come out to morning prayer, then you won't prosper, you won't do well. And there's a lot of guilt trips that are made by a lot of pastors today, which is unfortunate, that you do see a lot of this, where Koreans will come to morning prayer only in times of need. So if they're kids are studying for an entrance exam to do their SATs to go down in the States, you know, they're there at morning prayer. And once it's over, they don't come back.
Right.
So you see a lot of this misconception of what morning prayer is all about, what prayer is all about, what who God is, and this idea of who God is, where you have to earn God's favor through spiritual discipline and through the practice of prayer and dedication to your church, that if you do this or that, then God will have his favor on you. That has in some ways and in many ways become the situation of a Korean church today. And so it's unfortunate it's come to that. And not everybody feels that way. I'm not going to generalize and say every single person who comes to morning prayer, that's why they show up.
Right.
And every single pastor, Korean pastor, that's what they preach on the pulpit at morning prayer. But I have seen, even in what I consider probably some of the more significant ministries in the GTA, going that direction. And to me, it's very sad and unfortunate. And there's little snippets of that. You know, if you don't give your tithing, if you don't do this, or you don't do that, then, you know, God will not be faithful to you.
And that's all stemmed.
God will not bless you.
That all stemmed from that mentality, right?
That's right. So it's birthed out of that working culture.
Right.
So how's that now shaping some of the second gen and, you know, the future of the Korean church? Because I'm sure, like, the Korean church is evolving and changing, because, you know, the children of those who have, you know, immigrated, worked hard, and the morning prayer, like, they're having kids, and their kids are growing up, and then they're like entering as a bicultural kid, trying to figure out their identity and their spirituality and all that stuff, right? Like, then they're gonna be caught in this, like, dichotomy of, like, church and faith and life, right?
So, like, are they gonna buy into it, or are they gonna reject it, or,
you know, as a second gen Korean pastor, like, how is that shaping the way that you look at? And
if you're not a pastor, I think it's easy for you to want to reject that.
Yeah,
that's definitely something that I've seen. For the most part, they don't want to have anything to do with that sort of false ideology and that kind of theology where I have to earn my merit to get to heaven. And it's become pressure for a lot of second gen Koreans, I believe. Which is very unfortunate, because I don't believe that is the actual theology of the church in general, but in practice, that's how it has come out.
Right.
And I think with a lot of the congregation members, they don't have the proper theology built into their Christian education for them to be able to teach their children that's actually not what it's all about. But I think the way it's received is exactly that. That you have to work hard, then you'll be blessed. If you come to church, then you're gonna be blessed. And I believe a lot of second gen Koreans have made it sort of a unsaid mission of their own to prove their parents wrong.
Oh yeah,
you know, to go, no, I don't need this
to
become successful in my life, and I will make my own life. And so,
but they've almost thrown up the, you know, the baby with the bathwater, saying that's like, we reject everything.
Absolutely,
then. And we're going to say what it means to be successful. We don't need this, right? Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting
context. And so there are some, not all, some who have completely outright just walked away from the faith and had you know, have no affinity to going back to church anymore. So they have no sense of need or desire to go back to the church context. And so increasingly, I think more now you see, and I think Canada is a little bit slower in comparison to places like LA and New York, where Koreans living in comfortably in secular society, very sort of anti-church with anti-church mentalities, is very predominant. You see that in the culture in the States amongst second generation, third generation Koreans. But here in Canada, there's still this, it's still a bit too fresh, a little bit too early, where they still feel a little bit of a familial tie to the church because their parents go, and so they have to go season to season. But in terms of actually believing it for themselves, very rarely. Those who did come to know Jesus and did come to know the Lord through their younger years, maybe through youth ministry, or maybe through their through maybe good mentors and experiences with the church, are thriving and they're growing and they're very, very committed. Yeah. So I think it goes both ways.
Do you think that this is kind of like an opportune time? Yeah. You know, you were describing like LA and, you know, some of the West Coast and in the US, like
they're like post.
They're kind of like a generation ahead of Canada right now. Yeah. And with the knowledge of what it's becoming, would that be almost like now is the time?
Yeah, it's like a tipping point, right? It's like it's going to go one way or the other. Do people see that this is a time that if we don't change, it's going that direction? Therefore, do we need to course correct? Do we need to reevaluate? Do we need to minister in a different capacity?
I think in the Canadian context, we have a very, very big advantage over what the States had. Korean immigration first happened in Hawaii. So just before the Korean War, I believe it was through missionaries who came to Korea and then reached people with the gospel and had people come to know the Lord. Just before the Korean War, had people start immigrating to Hawaii. And so in Hawaii, you will see people who are in their 80s. You know, they're elderly people, but they speak fluent English and they don't speak a word of Korean. So these are people who young, they were young at the time, and they grew up into their culture in Hawaii, and for them English is a more comfortable part of their language, but they still do things very Korean.
Yeah.
And so you see that example there, and they've learned a lot through the immigrant experience, and then it then moved to California, to LA. And the Korean culture would begin to develop and to grow there. And they saw a lot of turmoil in the church between the second generation and the first generation. A lot of issues that would come about. You used to have a lot of second generation Korean church context, not Asian church context in LA and in the States in comparison to in Toronto. And so the benefit is that we're learning from a lot of the struggles that they went through. And so a lot of the research, a lot of the writing about these contextual issues, we're a lot more aware of them than they were. They were just beginning to study that at the time and experience that fresh and new.
Right.
We are about, I'd say about 10 to 15, maybe 20 years behind.
Okay.
But our knowledge of the issue is very, very, very much more modern.
Sure. You're almost looking at, you know, the States or as almost like a cautionary tale, saying like, well, you know, that's the way in which, you know, that can go, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe we need to rethink some of this stuff, right? I think even a lot of the missional movement stuff was in reactionary to a lot of different models of church, especially looking at Europe, right? Yeah. And they're like, wow, Europe is, you know, a few generations ahead in the church. And some European countries are, you know, the percentage of Christians is like less than 1%, right? And they're like, well, you know, what happened?
I think like a city like Toronto is like looking to the UK to kind of see where the potential future is, because the secularization of some of the European countries kind of like what's happening here in Toronto.
Sure.
And I think that's pretty awesome in some ways, but it's also like, I think it really forces us to respond and engage. Like we have to, like, or else we will, you know, live the very caution that we're reading.
Yeah, exactly. That's the path we will be doomed to. Now, have you noticed any differences between different cities? Like, I know you've been in Montreal and you were serving in Montreal for a while. And, you know, you grew up in Toronto and now you're back in Toronto, serving in Toronto. Was there a difference of what it means to be a Canadian Asian in between different cities?
Yeah, and even because your dad was in New York for a while. So you've been in and out of New York a little bit too.
Yeah, I mean, being in Montreal for close to about just over 3 years, Montreal is a very particular kind of context in the city where there's not that many Asians. There's still a significant amount of Asian population, but predominantly it's European descent.
Okay.
So Montreal is unique in a sense that still Asian people feel as though they are a minority. And it is very, very much emphasized that they are a minority. And especially if you're not fluent in French, you're often labeled as, you know, not even Anglophone. They won't even call you Anglophone. that would be...
Like the outsiders.
That would be pretty inclusive by any, you know, by stretch of any means. You know, it would be Francophone, Anglophone, and then you'd have, like, you know, people of minority or immigrants.
They've created a third term.
Yeah, in many ways, it feels that way.
Anglophones.
It's never said that way, but I think in everyday life, you're not either the Anglophone or the Francophone people. You definitely feel like you're a different crowd of people that somehow immigrated into Montreal, and somehow you don't really fit.
Is that Quebec as a whole or just Montreal? Because I know, like, even Montreal and Quebec City is a little bit different from the rest of Quebec. They seem to be even a little bit more inclusive.
Mm. Well, I think it's in general, the climate of Quebec in general is they're very proud of their heritage and their background and nationality. They don't even identify themselves as Canadian. They'll identify themselves as French-speaking Quebecois, right? And they are very proud to be of that heritage. And so naturally, I think if they have that sort of affinity to their heritage and their idea of what culture and life ought to look like for themselves, I think it does create a lot of division, I think, naturally. You know, not in the sense that it's coercively, that sort of culture is coercively applied, but it can feel that way in some means where... Naturally, that people who are Korean or Chinese or Vietnamese descent will be isolated in many ways.
Mm.
So how do you find, because I know you were pastoring out in Montreal for a little while, as an Anglophone, ethnic minority pastor, like how does that affect the way that mission and how you lead and, you know, your ministry there? Like how does that shape some of that?
I think... It goes two ways. One way is that your ministry can be extremely limited, but also, on the other hand, the positive note is that you can find people who are of similar situation to you, who have not heard the gospel who have maybe a yearning to be part of that kind of community and a sense of commitment to that community, a sense of belonging that really does develop.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, if you are looking at the larger picture of being an evangelical church or reaching people with the gospel, I think there is a limitation in terms of being an Anglophone and also being someone of minority.
Right.
I think being in a context where you don't really have that point of identification with people and relatability can be, in many ways, a limiting factor. I think the other stumbling block that I think I'm going to say the stumbling block that I came upon in ministry there is that there's a long, deep-rooted history of corruption of the church in general in Quebec, especially with the Catholic Church, let alone the United Church in Canada and also even the Presbyterian Church, having been involved with residential schools, even with the Catholic Church, having all the corruption, all the sexual scandals, sexual abuse scandals, as well as selling of indulgences. And so if you listen to the language that is often used in Quebec, even a lot of the curse words are sacrilegious words. And it comes to show you that there's a deep-seated bitterness towards the church, and that, I would say, is probably the most difficult hurdle that we had in Quebec. Also, the statistic, I believe, is less than 0.5% of the city of Montreal is Christian.
Sure.
And that includes Catholics and Protestants.
Sure.
So there's less Christians in Montreal than there are at a Montreal Canadiens game.
That's good to know.
Yeah. So it can be very daunting in that kind of context. And then on top of that, being an Asian church. So, you know, having been a pastor at a Korean church, I think it was definitely a challenge. Like, our community size, Korean community size, is very, very limited as a whole.
Right.
So I think in the Montreal area, we're talking about less than 4,000 to 5,000 Koreans as a whole in the entire city in the greater Montreal area. But I think the other difficult part of that is half of them are probably students.
Right.
So they're students at Concordia, McGill, and some of the other surrounding colleges. And it's a very, very transient group. So what you'll have is you'll have students time to time come into your ministry, and then, you know, a year or two later, maybe three, if they stay long, it'll be 3 years.
Sure.
They're gone. Prospect of growing a sustainable ministry becomes very, very difficult, because a lot of these students who do come into the Montreal area to study and to get an education, they don't speak French.
Hmm.
So the prospect of them getting a job and being employed in Quebec is almost nil, almost impossible for them. Or if they do, they're very, very lucky if they do.
Yeah, they're not going to stay, right?
Yeah, but their plan is never to stay. In fact, because of how someone might feel in that kind of environment where they do feel like they're quite a minority, also discriminate because of the language and their background, they don't stay. And so they do leave. But people who are born and raised there, they're a lot of time lifers.
Sure.
They will stay there because their family's there, their friends are there. But even amongst people who have grown up in Montreal, they also end up leaving too.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reality is, economically, Montreal is not exactly the best place. Reality is, other cities pay better for a lot of different kinds of industries.
Right.
Significant amount. Even if Toronto has a higher expense for living, the kind of environment that Toronto or Vancouver or places such as that will provide for them and their family and the prospect of a future and building a future, I think it looks a lot brighter in many other places. So you do have a dwindling population of second-gen Koreans in the Montreal area. So it does become very difficult if you're trying to do ministry in a second-gen Korean or Asian or Chinese or whatever kind of minority context, where they may not be able to grow in terms of only that cultural group.
Yeah.
And so you need to, at that point, start thinking, how can we reach other people with the gospel, more than just Korean people? And so you start thinking in different ways. Is it just a Korean and Asian context that we're looking to create?
Mm-hmm.
Or are we trying to do ministry in a larger scope and spectrum? But that becomes a very, very difficult proposition.
Sure.
As a minority group and as a people of minority. And so it ends up becoming very Asian. So
mm-hmm.
The ministry that I was part of became more Asian than it was Korean. The other hurdle that we had was also because Korean people in the Montreal area are of such minority, they band together and they really, really stick together.
Like a clique?
Yeah, it's a clique. And for those of you listening, if you're listening from Montreal, I apologize, but this has got to be the truth.
I think the great part about this is it's like you're bringing a perspective of what it means to be Canadian Asian, but in a different city, in a different province, you would define yourself in a different way, right? Mm-hmm.
Like I wonder if it's like also the idea of clique happens like kind of differently,
because mm-hmm.
like you were describing Montreal and its setting and how like difficult mm-hmm. in the context, and where Asians just need to band together because that's there's right. only like yeah. a certain percentage. But here in Toronto, there's so much Asians,
mm-hmm. yeah.
like it's so easy. Just stick with your kind, and mm-hmm. you know, you just kind of chill with them.
I don't particularly label it as a negative thing.
I
see it as
that's just a circumstance.
It's just a circumstance,
right.
and it's a place where you know whether it's a Chinese church in Montreal in French speaking Montreal, or whether it's Korean, people of minority tend to band together right. because it's a safe place. It's a yeah. safe zone where they feel like they belong,
right.
where they feel like they can be recognized as they are and be as they are and not being criticized for yeah. how little French that they speak or,
right. yeah.
You know,
yeah. and or the kind of food they
that's
eat.
That's right.
Yeah. yeah.
So in some ways, those church contexts become even more Asian.
Sure.
Themselves. So the church that I was part of in Montreal, they're very, very traditional.
Right.
Very, very Korean. It's not even Korea of today. So if you took that Korean context and then moved that church and put it in Korea itself, they would also be alien.
They'd be run out of town.
That's right. Because it's because they're still trapped in the 1970s and 80s when they
right.
when they immigrated here yeah. to Canada, and they've preserved that cultural context within themselves. And so I think in some ways it's great for that group of people who need to be. Who need that place of identity and that preservation of identity. But in terms of understanding the context of second generation Asian context, where we need to build upon a ministry that has very limited number of second generation Asian sure. people, it becomes a very big hurdle, because exactly like when we go out into the Quebec culture where we feel like a minority, if we brought a Quebec person into that church environment, it would feel very much like a minority sure. even in that kind of setting as well. And so trying to break that barrier of sort of mono-ethnicity, it becomes a very, very difficult proposition sure. for a church. And there's a lot of, you know, I've had times where some of the adults in the congregation came up to me directly and just criticized me and said to me, are you trying to make a multicultural church? Because you can't do that here. This is a Korean church.
Wow.
wow.
And so it was a lot of opposition.
Yeah, right. for sure.
And initially that made me very, very angry. You know, I was saying to myself, you know, does this person even read the Bible? Like, you know, are they going to come to the church because it's a social club? Is this,
what translation? Know, what is, this? Yeah. is it talking? Yeah.
That's right. Is this the Korean translation of the Bible? I wasn't really sure.
Go and make Korean disciples of all nations.
That's right.
Yeah, hey, so, who put that there?
And so you'd have people coming in from outside of that sort of cultural group and coming into our church, and they would say, oh, you should go to Korean class, or, you know, and try to recruit them into Korean language courses right, so that they right. learn Korean so that they can adapt to being part of our church, which to me was, wow, like I just couldn't believe that kind of stuff was like that was their mentality.
Like that level of yeah. assimilation that's, or conformity,
that's
right. right?
That's yeah. the early church.
Yeah.
Because they had to get circumcised.
Yeah, that's right.
right? And that was a whole debate.
Code tell the Gentiles.
Oh, you better get circumcised.
Yeah, that's right.
Let me do the snip, and then you can be a Christian.
You're not fully part of this until yeah. you get the snip. Yeah.
yeah.
Oh, man. This is some really good discussion here we got going on. So what part do you believe the Korean Canadian church plays in the mission of God?
For a church that is constantly looking to grow missionally and evangelism and reaching out to others, we see the mission begin to expand to grow. And in the Korean Canadian church context, I do see a lot of our Korean Canadian churches beginning to do that. Mm. And it's growing much more than just a Korean congregation. It's becoming much more, right now it's becoming more Asian centric.
Sure.
So whether we like it or not, the second, third, now fourth generation Koreans were not only born here, but have their parents also born here, and then the parents before that born here, or have come here very, very early on in their life, see things in a very, very different light in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're no longer just holding on to their Korean-Canadian identity, but now seeing as they've built confidence in who they are and as a social identity begin to be able to reach outwards to other cultures and people who kind of identify with that sort of immigrant culture.
Yeah.
So we do see a lot of shift and change where even some of the Korean second generation, third generation Korean congregations now are shifting more into a second, third, fourth generation Asian context.
Right.
And even from that, we're starting to see it go outside of that box. And so I think the natural, if I don't know if I can say this word, evolution of the Korean.
You could say what you want on this podcast.
I would say in the next probably 10, 20 years, we'll see a very big shift and a change as immigrancy also begins to change in the way we see immigration in Canada. And depending on, you know, the political climate too, I think it can affect the church as a whole. Definitely when we're seeing much more integration of different ethnicities and of people of different cultural backgrounds begin to work together, begin to grow together, mm-hmm. and where they no longer see as much of a difference between color and cultural background, we'll also begin to see that in the church naturally.
Sure.
You know, there are a lot of people, I think, right now, I used to be one of those people who used to say, oh, no, this, like, monoethnic culture in the church is terrible. It should not happen, and I'm against it. And I used to think that way. But as I've been noticing what God's doing in a lot of different congregational settings, I'm realizing that there's only so far that can go until people begin themselves, the way people are and the way people think and how they experience life and ministry begins to evolve and change.
Mm-hmm.
And naturally, I think the churches will begin to change.
Sure.
The older generation will retire. They will no longer have as much sort of steam and gusto to do the kind of work that they used to do, and they're going to start handing the reins off to the younger generation.
Sure.
And when that begins to happen, I think we will definitely see a shift and a change. And you'll especially see it in the Korean-Canadian church context. But I think the benefit of the Korean-Canadian church is they do still have that sort of that fire and that sense of passion for the church and to be maybe a little more forward-thinking.
Sure.
That can be passed down. Some will say, no, it's not. That's not going to happen. You know, the second generation is responding by being passive. They've been given all these things, and so they don't know how to take ownership. But I think they will grow into it. There will be a struggle. There will be a time where people, you know, have some pains.
Kind of the growing pains, yeah, the transitions.
We'll also see, I think, the birth of second, third, fourth generation churches.
Right.
Which is becoming very evident today. We're seeing many more of these second generation Asian church contexts where they're a lot more inclusive of different ethnicities and backgrounds. Naturally, because some of the people of, you know, Korean descent will marry non-Koreans.
Right.
We'll see a big mixture of different ethnicities come together.
Mm.
And so that, like I was saying before, that idea of color and race and all of that, I think naturally in Canada, in this context right now, it'll become much more sort of beige, a little more gradient.
That's awesome. Yeah, and like that's a great hope for how the church can continue to grow and continue to be formed. Let me take that to the next step. What do you think that looks like as the church is sent out into the world? What do you think that will look like for the future of the Korean church?
You know, unfortunately, a lot of them have left a very, very negative impact, I would say.
Yeah, sure.
On a lot of these cultural contexts, because they would go in with a very Korean context and say, and a very Korean spirituality and teach people very, very Korean kind of spirituality, right, as opposed to the very basis of the gospel and gospel centric.
Right. Yeah. We've talked a little bit about like colonization on this podcast before. Right. Yeah.
So, you know, just like the white colonists did with the gospel, and, you know, a lot of the Koreans are doing the exact same thing and have done the exact same thing. But I think the younger generation is a lot more aware of that because they are exposed to many, especially in the Korean Canadian context, where they're a lot more aware of the different kind of cultures and contexts that are around them.
Sure.
And a lot more sensitive to the sort of differences between people. I think increasingly over time, we'll see younger missionaries who are a lot more wise and a lot more, a lot more confident in being able to interact with people of different cultures and
backgrounds and faiths and stuff.
That's right. Yeah.
You know what? You know, you're just bringing back a memory. I remember hearing you speak at a retreat once. And I remember the emphasis you put that, you know, we're not just Christians, meaning like we're not just, we hold a certain belief or we're part of a church, but we are missionaries, right? Mm-hmm. That is an intrinsic part of our DNA, mm-hmm. that wherever we are gospel bearers. We are on the mission of God. We are the people that God has placed in this world. And I always appreciated that. That always stuck with me. I always appreciated the heart that you had to be able to equip and encourage and enable others to think about themselves in that sense, that because, you know, that's the way God has given us stewardship over the world. God has invited us to be part of what he's doing in this world. And that is a huge part of, you know, who we are as Christians, not just as part of community, which is a critical part of it, but that we also are purposed in this world.
Yeah, and I am seeing that in a lot of the younger people these days. They're really trying to identify with the community around them, to making sure that they're not, you know, funneled into this, you know, Christian-centric world, and really trying to identify with their friends outside of that circle. And also, you just see their awareness of all the different kind of spiritual traditions that they're exposed to. And so in some ways, I think for the younger, like, for example, like high school, teenage generation, they may be a little bit intimidated by that. They don't know how to speak into that context and how to be missionaries. But I think by them just being there and exposed to that, and to be raised up in that sort of environment where they are aware more of those traditions and those cultures and those surroundings, I think as they grow older, they may grow a little more wiser in how to navigate as they also mature in their spiritual journey and their walk. A lot of youth pastors that I've talked to, they're very concerned because their youth are not as confident as they used to be, you know, reaching out to their friends and sharing the gospel with their friends. But then, you know, I think about, well, what context was that? And, you know, why were they so confident before? And I realized because it was so monoethnic, it was so monocultural. You know, they're reaching into, you know, a history of people who have experience with church and have experience with the gospel. And so reintroducing that may not be as much of a hurdle as speaking into people who are of Hindu background or of Muslim background, and being able to speak into those contexts is definitely a totally different ballgame.
Sure.
So it's going to take a while. It's going to take a while for our generation to catch up and for them to learn to grow. But by them being there, I think is an amazing, amazing thing.
Yeah.
And so we'll see the difference, I think, in 10, 15 years as they grow and as they mature.
Awesome. Thanks so much, James, for joining us today. You know, to check out some of the awesome work that James is doing, visit TheophilusDevos.com or look up Theophilus Devos on YouTube. Once again, this is the Canadian Asian Missional Podcast. Please remember to subscribe on iTunes or Podbean, and don't forget to rate and review our episodes. We'd love to hear from you, so please hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, or email and leave us your comments and feedback. Let us know how you're engaging with this episode's content and how you're striving to be missional in your lives and context. Also, let us know how our podcast can engage some of these issues better and be able to talk about some of the challenges we're all going through. And we hope you'll join us next time on this journey. See you guys.